Welcome to The Created Life. The Created Life is a podcast featuring insightful conversations with people living life by their own rules and making a positive impact. I'm Damian Taggart, serial entrepreneur, wilderness guide, poet, and author, and I'll be your host on this journey. The Created Life is an episodic dose of inspiration, life hacks, and engaging ideas to help you grow and create a life you love. In today's episode of The Created Life, I speak with a man of many talents, Diallo Johnson. Diallo is an accomplished martial artist, professional dancer, and dance educator, Qigong and meditation teacher, artist, speaker, and author. Diallo has performed and taught internationally. He facilitates diversity awareness and leadership development trainings, does motivational speaking, and engages in creative expression in many mediums. Diallo is committed to total multidimensional fitness and practices the principles of peak performance, essential nutrition, health and vitality, cleansing and healing on all levels. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about just kind of what you're up to, your career, your interests, also this really interesting week that you just put yourself through, which is actually kind of how this conversation got started. But then it's like, you know, I think that's just an entry point to a lot of other things that, you know, absolutely. In getting to know you, I'm like, this guy's doing a lot of the stuff that I'm thinking about a lot and like, you know, trying to engage in a way with life that's very holistic, like looking at health and looking at maximizing your potential on a lot of different levels, not just like physical, not just emotional, not just, you know, it's like really bringing a lot of things together. So that's, yeah, it's really near and dear to my heart, that kind of stuff. So I'm cool. Excited to hear about your thoughts on all that.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Damian. It's great to be here. And yeah, it's interesting. I just did a seven day fast and I call it a depth fast or a deep fast because I didn't have another name for it. And it was 7 days of no food, no talking, no technology, and no sight. I blindfolded myself the whole time.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And the fasting, when I speak of fasting, I'm talking about not eating any solid food, because I know people define fasting in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. Just to be specific, when I'm speaking of it, I'm liquid or greater, meaning like it might be some kind of, I was doing a master cleanser mix, lemonade, cayenne pepper, maple syrup, or agave nectar.
Sure.
The first day was all water. And then I've done some days that are dry at other times. I fasted a lot in my life. I think I'm up to a little over 850 days total.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was kind of inspired because I read a book, I forget the name of it, years ago. And there was this formula in it that talked about for every year of poor eating, you should fast 7 days. And I don't think that was 7 days continuously. I think it was just total time to clear out your system. So I was like, okay, I'll use that. And like, so now I'm well above the
that threshold.
Threshold, yeah, exactly. That's cool. I didn't know, and I also counted it from day one because I didn't know what my you know, intake was when I was young. I know it wasn't as clear and clean as it is now because I do follow a vegan diet right now.
Cool.
And I have gone raw vegan sometimes, and that just feels healthier and better.
Cool.
I came up with a term called eating closer to the sun. I think the closer we eat to the sun, the better off we are.
That's
because
cool.
the sun is the one of the life givers along with the earth. It feeds the plants. They do photosynthesis. The animals eat the plants. And then we sometimes eat the animals. So we're like several removes from the source. So if we eat the plants themselves or our fruits or, you know, get out in the sunshine, which has been shown to be so good for us, we can absorb that energy. But what fasting has afforded me, one of the things, a lot of people think about it as, you know, cleansing our physical, but it actually cleanses on multiple levels. Like you were mentioning earlier, like having health on multiple levels, fasting actually affects us on multiple levels, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. And then to add to that, to not have any distractions, to supposedly 80% of our brain is used with processing our visual input. And so when I was blindfolded, I took that away, which means that I freed up all this energy. And it was definitely an intense and transformative process. And some of what I noticed for me was the feeling of like internalizing even more, like being aware of my own thoughts even more and my own feelings, because there was nothing to distract me.
Right.
Like there was no, it was about, you know, either feeling my way around to another location to sit or lay, and sitting on the couch is good, just as good as sitting on the floor, and not having any quote unquote plans. You know, so right. It was really a deepening process.
So let me make sure just I understand exactly, and for our listeners, like exactly what you were going through was no sight, no solid foods, some like basically like master cleanse kind of fluids, no communication with anyone in the outside world. So you told people ahead of time that you were going to be out of the loop.
I was just like, I'm unavailable, I'm going on a retreat or something like that.
And then, so you were completely, essentially like in almost a sensory deprivation kind of state for seven days.
7 days, correct.
That's incredible. And did you sleep during this time?
I did, Okay. And I'm not sure how much, because I got a general sense of when it was light and when it was dark. And then I did sometimes from just feeling the coolness of the wind through the windows. It's just interesting how tactile, like, you know, people say if you lose a sense, the other sense is heightened. And I felt some of that go on, like my... I would hear things or was more sensitive to what I was hearing. Was feeling my way around, and it was interesting to have some close calls and, or like the oddness of thinking I was in a certain place physically, but then actually feeling something and being like, whoa, I was like 2 feet off of where I thought I was. And so, yeah, it was fascinating.
So, you know, what I have to ask is, like, did you cheat at some point? Did you, did you, like, peek out of your,
that's
you know,
a great question.
Blindfold?
I actually did the math. There's 168 hours in the week, right? 99.99% of the time I was in total darkness.
Okay.
Because there was times when I, like, had to rub my eyes or something, and I would see, like, a flash or something. But, yeah. And then 99.999% of the time, I didn't talk. Like, the first couple of days, like, I'm used to invoking things out loud when I meditate or pray or what have you. I started, like, mumbling that, and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to be quiet. And then, like, it tapered off after a couple of days. But, yeah, it was only... It wasn't even like 6 seconds of total time talking.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I have a lot of questions about this.
Yeah, please.
But I think, you know, one of the things that's most striking to me about this, I want to get into like more of like what you got out of it and how it felt, what the experience was like to you. But one of the things just before we get into that, that's so interesting to me is like the level of self-discipline that is required to, because I've thought about like, to really do a fast of this nature when you're in a place where you could easily just take your blindfold off, you could easily just call a friend, you could easily just go to your refrigerator, make yourself a sandwich. So like I think it's different if you're looking at it in the context of I've heard of like week-long silent retreats people do where they're in a formal setting and there's other people kind of governing it in a way.
Consensus reality.
Yeah, and so I think in those kinds of contexts there's a lot of it is externalized to other people, to the context you're in, you know? Whereas what you were doing was very much of, like, what's so striking about it is that it is this self-discipline practice that you've gotten to this level where you can, like, I can only imagine what I might be like sitting in my house, like, haven't eaten for 4 days, and, like, there's a refrigerator full of food. Like, I don't know if I have the self-discipline to do that, you know? And so like, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of it's practice. Like I mentioned, I fasted quite a bit in my life. And in terms of if people are thinking right now, like, man, it's something I love to do, I can't necessarily say I'd recommend it or not recommend it. It would be individual based on a person's experience. Like if a person's never fasted before and they want to do something like this, I would say maybe you want to fast a little bit so you get to
know. Try 12 hours.
Exactly. Get to know what your body, how your body reacts. Because I was familiar with like the cycle that goes on when I don't eat solid food. Like the first day or two, I might, you know, sometimes I'll feel hungry, sometimes I won't. After the third day, usually third or fourth day, depending, this self-cleansing, self-healing process kicks in. Your body adjusts and you, like, there could be an energy high that you get. Supposedly some of the design of the human physical form is that we're actually used to not eating. So if you imagine in some genetic ancestry that we were on the plains or what have you, and there was no food available, like we're used to fasting.
Sure.
And so in our modern times, we actually don't engage with that as much as but it would probably be harmonic for us.
Right. You know, it's like, it's good to give your metabolism a break from processing all of that food. Because like that's actually how our bodies were designed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I stopped eating, I call it eating by the clock. I stopped eating by the clock, you know, years ago where, you know, oh, breakfast at this time, lunch at this time, dinner at this time. Because if I'm not hungry, there's no need for me to eat. And so getting in touch with that sensitivity of what we actually need, mm-hmm. and only consuming what we need when we need is a really refined level.
Yet another level of paying attention to your body.
Exactly.
Listening to your body.
Exactly.
Cultivating that kind of awareness.
Right. And sensitivity. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things, another thing that fasting has afforded me is also let me increase that sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And also the whole emotional, social connection to food is tremendous.
Right.
Like think about all our holidays. Like it's usually with Thanksgiving, Christmas, there's usually food present, birthdays, there's eating going on and we're connecting with people. So there's an emotional connection to it as well, mm-hmm. which when people say they're hungry, that could be tied into what they're actually feeling.
Totally.
So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So. No, I think it's clear that, you know, even from like in my past, there was definitely periods where I was like deeply addicted to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, food was definitely one of those things. It was I was using it as a crutch, using it as a kind of, a way to stimulate sort of positive neurotransmitters, yes. that would make me feel good.
Yeah.
But, and so it's like I was solving a short-term goal, mm. which is like feel good in this moment, mm-hmm. but I was creating long-term problems. And yes. I think a lot of people are doing that, you know, with yes. emotional eating and just...
Absolutely.
And, you know, a lot of people probably come from a similar background to me too, where it's like they don't even have the knowledge, like, mm-hmm. or when they're from the household that they're raised in.
Correct.
It's like you're coming up from a household that barely understands nutrition.
Correct.
And actually on a larger scale, barely understands what it means to be a human being.
Correct.
On some level.
I agree.
Like that's just like right. a thing that we're still all discovering.
Right. And we're told a lot of things
yeah.
that just happen not to be true or accurate in terms of what our full potential is
totally.
And what true human beingness is. Mm-hmm. If people might have heard like we're you know human doing versus human being. We're like conditioned to be human doings, mm-hmm. like to identify our self-worth and our esteem by what we do out in the world, not just by our beingness.
Right.
And I'm similar to you. I came up in it like my household wasn't you know nutritionally. Adept.
Sure. It's a nice way of saying it.
Right. Fast food on Fridays, you know,
right.
it's just like exciting, you know. And so I had to learn and cultivate that myself. And I mm-hmm. think that's part of the journey is doing our own research. And when I say research, I mean actual like reading things, but also internally.
Like your own science
exactly.
lab, right?
Exactly. Kind of. We're the 24-hour-day, 7-day-a-week laboratory called SELF, so we can experiment and see.
What works for me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How do I feel when I put this
exactly.
in
versus that?
That. Yeah.
And I think, for example, one of the mistakes people make is they don't understand the effects of certain changes they make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I've had people say, oh, yeah, I tried being vegan. It didn't work for me, as opposed to maybe... you didn't work it correctly
mm-hmm.
because you didn't have all the information you needed or you didn't understand the detox process that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people will do things and they'll say, oh yeah, I started eating a lot cleaner and then I started breaking out or my breath smelled or whatever. And then so after 3 days of that, I stopped and went
right.
back to my old way. And they don't realize that what was going on was detoxing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the detox process stops when you go back to eating the less energetic, less heightened stuff, the junk food.
Totally.
So it's like, instead, if we don't recognize that process goes on, same thing with fasting. People are like, oh, the first 3 days, I couldn't get past the first 3 days. But if you get past those 3 days, you know, there's a cleansing that happens. So, and it depends on how long, you know, you have been eating, you know, poorly nutritionally in terms of like what's going to happen, what the effects are going
to
be.
Totally. I think there's similar threads to like any kind of... positive change that you want to make in your life, often, you know, beyond just nutrition, I think you have to retrain yourself. And
absolutely.
So a lot of the time you'll run into some kind of blockage or some kind of, you know, roadblock that you maybe want to, your instinct is just to turn back from
right,
and say, it's
exactly.
too, you know, we ran into this
right.
roadblock. But it's like yeah. what I've learned, you know, in kind of over maybe a decade of really trying to reprogram myself and unlearn all these negative and sort of self-destructive habits that
yeah.
I had,
mm-hmm.
part of that process for me was really just trying and failing and trying and failing and trying and failing, you know, just going back to it and taking, sometimes just like letting go. I'm not going to try that for a while.
Right.
But I think it's like any journey that's hard, you know, you're going to, it's never going to be that straight line. It's always mm-hmm. this really circuitous route that you're just, you know.
What's that? Do you have an example of that in your own process that you...
Oh, yeah. Like quitting smoking was one for me, too.
Yeah.
You know, where it was like...
What happened with that?
I had to give that so many different tries, you know? And at first, it was like even on a level of... I was so deeply enmeshed in this idea of myself as a smoker. It was part of my personality, you know? Where the thought of being a non-smoker just seemed like, why would I even want to keep living as a non-smoker? I was like that deep into it.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew that was crazy at the time.
Right.
But it still was the way I felt. And so it was like, you know, in order to break that kind of addiction, you have to just, you know, get the idea and then try it, see how hard it is, go back. But you have to just, you build up strength. It's just like any kind of conditioning, right? So it's like, whether you're conditioning your body or your mind, you know, it's the same kind of process.
That's great, man. Yeah, that's hardcore for you to stop that with that deep level of like connection to it. And that's the thing, I think people don't necessarily treat some of their dietary practices as addictions, mm-hmm. but they actually are.
Totally.
You know, in terms of like the emotional social connection that I mentioned earlier, but also like the chemical like dependency that goes on, because there's a lot of like processed foods, especially some of the flesh products, there's a lot of chemicals that get put in there, and we respond to that hormonally, and so we can get addicted to those things. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
and there's a real quick thing when you're talking about how long it takes to change stuff or what things get, there's a couple thoughts I have on that. One, I flash back on this story, this trainer Hale Dwoskin, he is a person before was the Sedona method. He was talking about walking across a room. So we get halfway across the room, we're like, I'm only halfway across the room. I'm going to turn around and go back now. So instead of like, why haven't I gotten there yet? It's instead of like, keep going. So I think that connects to some of our instant gratification conditioning as well. Like we want stuff today or yesterday.
Yeah.
Which as a Aries energy, astrologically, like I understand that and I get that, like, give it all to me yesterday. So, and then just learning to be engaged in the process in the now moment as best we can, and realizing that over time and over energy expended over time, we can achieve certain things that we want. And then there are some vibrations and energies or temperaments that can just make a choice and stop stuff.
Right, they're just there,
you know?
Totally.
And so it's about having the acceptance of either pathway, because, you know, your smoking journey, you were talking about quitting that, like you were committed.
Yeah.
It was about building up your strength and tolerance for not doing it.
Yeah.
You know? And when I think the pain of experiencing something becomes greater than our desire to do it, that's what can help us motivate us to that change.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we start to have small victories along the way. Right?
Absolutely.
Oh, I got that far. Like, right. I know I can do that now. So that's what it is for me too. I think with anything, it's like, you know, in like physical training or whatever, like rock climbing, whatever else.
Yeah. Right.
It's like you get a little victory and you're like, yeah.
Right.
Start to have that feeling of yourself, you know, doing the right thing on the battlefield and like, you know, or on the court, you know, and really feeling that kind of confidence come up. So
confidence is really important in that. And it's interesting because we mentioned physical training a number of times. And I think the power of physical training is that it does connect to other levels. If you're doing certain types of training,
right.
It connects to the emotional, the mental, the spiritual, the energetic, the psychological. And if we approach it that way, the victories we get physically can actually meld and blend and merge into other aspects of our lives.
Totally. And that's maybe a good segue to talk about some of the other things that you've been up to, like as a martial artist, as a dancer, and kind of how to, you know, I do want to circle back to the
other questions about the fasting.
Okay. Let's actually do that first.
Just to make sure we get to it.
Because I do want to talk about other stuff too. Mm-hmm. But a little bit more about the experience of, you know, so you're in your 7 days, you're getting through this period.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? How did you feel? What were you going through?
It was pretty amazing overall, and transformative and intense. And this actually does segue into some of the other stuff I'm up to. I've been committed to my own healing journey for quite a while now, it feels like, and probably beyond this lifetime. And So I was doing a lot of clearing and healing, especially emotionally and mentally, like noticing the thoughts that were coming up, noticing the judgment patterns, releasing those, having the emotional response to it, releasing that, either crying or shaking or moving or going out and using it. I actually did work out a couple of times, or going out to where I had my heavy bag and hitting that some, and mm-hmm. just working, moving energy, which is interesting, emotion. Energy in motion. So it's
cool.
It's designed to move. And one of the places I think we get stuck is by being stuck in our emotional movement. Like we don't allow ourselves to feel fully, and we don't allow the feeling to move through us fully. So I think the design is that we feel something and then we can move it through. Yeah, we feel something and we tend to hold on to it. And that hold stays there until we actually keep and actually do some specific processes to help move it. So, and with that, like, I felt like I was getting clearer. I was getting deeper. I was like, I was having images come up of like childhood experiences sometimes, just that seemed random, but they aren't really. It was like my system was giving me things that mm-hmm. needed to be cleared or worked on or ready to come up. Mm-hmm. And the more we have acceptance for what presents itself, the more that will present itself. It's almost like deeper layers are communicated with by the layers that it receive acceptance. Like, it's okay to move. Like our being now has acceptance for these things and has the strength to hold space for them. So now they can come up and be moved and healed with that.
So that's really cool. I love the way you're really talking about healing and acceptance as kind of being really fused together in mm-hmm. a very important way. Mm-hmm. It was something that came up for me recently was the thought that part of healing trauma is actually accepting it. It's like letting that trauma be.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was like a real kind of aha moment for me, because I think a lot of times I was thinking about it like healing trauma right. means getting rid of it somehow.
Yes.
You know?
But which is dangerous in some levels.
And it seems like we, you know, no matter what we want, we don't get to change the past. And so like, you know, that's one of those things where we have to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of like moving past something in our past is to allow it to be and allow it and to then like use it energetically in
yes.
some way.
And then interestingly enough, that might actually quote unquote change our past
right.
by doing that. Because one of the things that cues me if there's something that's still there is if I think about something and there's still an emotional charge around it. Mm-hmm. Like if we have experiences and right now listeners can think about this, like something that happened in our past that we still feel a strong emotional charge around. Usually the images are more vivid as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when we work through something, it comes up just as information. Oh yeah, that happened to me.
Right.
Not, oh, that happened to me.
Exactly.
You know, it's still being
yeah,
triggered and
totally.
Charged by
mm-hmm.
it. So yeah, I'm with you. And I think that's important, because one of the things that happens in some of the systems that are on this planet right now have us actually try to deny or push away or ignore or suppress trauma patterns,
mm-hmm.
Along with that, their mental systems, their mental techniques or tactics or exercises, trying to apply to an emotional state, and mm-hmm. they actually move differently. The mental is more electric. The emotional is magnetic, so they need different processes. And a lot of the systems of so-called healing on this planet are more mental processes.
Sure.
And they're trying to impose that on the emotional, whereas the emotional has its own pathway and its own way of moving. And for us to allow that and accept that and to get in touch with what that is. Mm-hmm. And I alluded to some of it, or gave examples of some of it earlier, whether it's crying or screaming or mm-hmm. shaking or, you know, breathing heavily, letting your breathing back, letting our emotional bodies and our physical bodies move how they want to move and move
right.
the energy out. If you look at wild animals, if a gazelle is chased and escapes, the first thing it does when it's out of that dangerous situation is it shakes undo the trauma.
Yeah,
they actually have a process where undo the trauma. If you watch human babies before we get traumatized, babies cry fully and completely.
Yeah.
The only thing if the big people around them allow them to go through the cycle, they're actually finish it and start smiling and laughing and be calm again.
Mm.
But usually what happens is we pick them up and we pat them on the back.
Totally.
You know, and like, don't make any noise, because the judgment patterns that we have is I'm a bad parent, or I'm a bad big person if this baby's crying.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the baby's actually just moving energy.
Totally.
So we all were masters of emotional movement at one time before it became suppressed out of us.
Right, it was just pure intuition at that moment.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Where we were just acting.
Right.
Yeah, without, exactly. Yeah.
We feel distressed as a baby and we just start moving. We just start crying and we'll cry until it's done.
That's definitely something I think about as a parent. I'm always like, I am aware of the fact that I am sometimes trying to socialize my children in ways that I know will make them fit in more, but at the same time is probably not actually really what I should be doing on a more pure level. I think what you're saying reminds me of that. Just, you know, there's moments where as a parent, I'm trying to suppress their reaction or trying to you know, corral it in some way.
What age are you?
7 and 10.
Oh,
I have two little boys. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's it's weird. No, it's weird because I think a lot of parents probably have some level of awareness of both sides of that. You know, where we're like, we're being pushed in this way where we think what our culture wants us to do versus maybe what we're feeling actually internally. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a weird balance.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think some of what this is actually interesting. I've done a lot of early intervention work, which coaching, academic and social skills coaching for K-5, kindergarten through fifth grade, some middle school, some high school. So I love that. I call some of the young ones I work with my divine knuckleheads.
Totally.
They're just real and raw. I love that. And they have attitudes that are pretty profound. But, and those attitudes are based on some of their trauma. One of the things I notice is that we are, what you're noticing is that actually exactly right. We are socialized in certain ways. Mm-hmm. As men children act certain ways, as women children act certain ways. Like, we're socialized to move certain emotions at certain times, but only so much. Mm-hmm. But if you move too much, we have words for you. You move too, you know, there's all this socialization. So maybe the distinction, or one of the distinctions, is to, you know, your boys are going to follow what you model more so than any, like, how, it reminds me of the saying, who you're being speaks so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying.
Uh-huh.
So it's like they're going to, regardless of what you say to them, that's going to be something that impacts about how you are in the world.
For sure.
Know? Absolutely. And if you can make the distinction, maybe it, because we do have the societal pressures, or as a parent, you feel those societal pressures of how they're going to behave, you can make the distinction between when you're around me and when we're by ourselves.
Right.
These are things you could do. And when we're out in public,
right,
these are things you could do.
Got to put your pants on.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Can't be running around dangling. So, not yet anyway, buddy. It reminds me of a woman I knew. She had a son and we were trained in some similar healing work. And I was going into the office I was working at the time, and she was sitting on the curb with her son, and he was basically having what we would call a tantrum, you know, and he was like, and she was like, just gently holding him so he wouldn't hurt himself or anybody else. And knowing what she was doing, I just came up and just held space. Mm-hmm. And so we became consensus reality for what was going on. And sure enough, after a couple of minutes, he was laughing and giggling after she allowed him to move through those emotions.
Totally.
So,
yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So
that's cool.
Right.
So back to your experience.
Okay,
you're like, you're telling me.
Right? So, so yeah, it was, the other thing that went on for me is, you know, a deeper connection with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
That direct, that's one of the things that goes on. We think we can't communicate directly with the divine, and that's actually false. It's like what I sense, feel, understand, and know is that the divine actually wants us to communicate directly. And so if we start doing that or requesting that or opening up those channels, I think, you know, we can, just like any other skill set, we can develop a skill set in that stronger and stronger. So for me, it was like I felt that deeper connection and that deeper resonance and that deeper communication.
That's really cool. So is that kind of like prayer for you? Is that how you describe that? Or?
You know...
Or not? Something else?
Yeah. Maybe something else is because prayer tends to be...
A loaded
loaded.
Term?
Yeah, it has a lot of connotations. It. Yet if we strip away those connotations and prayer being communication with the divine, then yes, that's the definition. So oftentimes our prayer is distress-based. Like, we pray when we're,
I want a motorboat.
Yeah, exactly. Or desire-based. Yeah, right. Distress or desire-based, right?
Yeah.
It's like we pray when we want something or when something's going wrong.
Right.
I would encourage, and I do attempt to do this myself, to pray when things are going well.
Totally.
Like, to communicate
gratitude.
Exactly. Yeah. Gratitude is so powerful and important. Appreciation. Appreciate it has two definitions. It's, you know, the gratitude, the thankfulness, mm-hmm. is also to increase in value.
Totally.
So it's like when we appreciate something, we communicate to the universe, like, we want more of this. We communicate to the divine, we want more of this. So to pray when things are going well, like, oh, you know, thank you for that interview I had on the podcast, or thank you for, like, that synchronicity that brought us here, or what have you. Like, the universe is like, oh, yeah, it reminds me of this story. Like, imagine that you have a little three-year-old in your life, which you've had twice, right? You get him an ice cream cone, and they're like, oh, thank you so much for this ice cream cone. This is the best ice cream cone ever. And you're like, oh, okay, I might want to do that again. But the other three-year-old's like, you give my ice cream cone, you're like, here you go. And they're like, hmm. And they like just lick it and walk away. Yeah, right, exactly. Like a little ass, right? And you're like, okay, I'm noted, right?
Totally.
For you. I think so. Similarly, I think the divine parents or the universal energy that we're inextricably part of and connected to anyway, like, feels that way also. Like, it'll give us the response based on our response.
Totally.
It's reflective and holographic. So,
yeah, it's another way of looking at, another way of sort of saying that we create the world that we see, you know.
Yeah.
So if we see the world a certain way, we're going to react in a certain way. And like, everybody's out to get me,
right?
You're going to start interacting with people in that way, you
and
know?
Help Whereas, create that reflection. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, totally.
Cool.
That's cool. So,
and then, oh yeah, to continue right back on the 7 days.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wanted to ask, like, so before you got to that, like, deep, that sounds like a really profound point where you were at, where you're like, oh, I can communicate to the divine. That's like a pretty profound state that you're into at that point. Before you got there, when you were just like dealing with encountering yourself so intensely, like, oh, here's all my thoughts, because everything else is stripped away, right? So you've got just you that you're like interfacing with, right? How was that? Like, was there like a moment where you're like, just sick of yourself?
like
how was
that?
Yeah,
right,
what was that like?
No, actually, you know, I do, I've been doing quite a bit of internal and introspective work for a number of years. So part of me was familiar with that state, those states. Also from fasting before, which tends towards more quietude for me generally. Sometimes it doesn't. Like, there's been fasts I've done where I'm still working out and teaching classes and everything. And but yeah, so that level of familiarity with that introspection, it definitely deepened it. And it's interesting, the word that came to mind for like communicating with the divine was like, they're on some level, like, they're coaches as well, because I welcome that. Like, I will ask for assistance if I'm moving through certain things or understandings, and then I'll hear or feel or sense things that will give me understandings or help me move into unconditional acceptance around things. And just like, it's definitely a co-creation in terms of like the healing process for me.
Cool. Yeah. I like that term.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that's a place we can all choose to move towards, you know, as we feel and sense and desire. And I think as a collective, we're moving more towards that as well. Like, this planetary sphere, this as sector of the galaxy, to get, you know, exoplanetarily, this sector of the universe, like, we're all, everything's being uplifted vibrationally. And I think that's some of the turmoil and shaking up that we're seeing now. It reminds me of the image I get is, or I think of, is if you have a glass of water with soot and silt at the bottom, and you pour pure, clean, clear water into that glass till it's overflowing, it's going to stir up all that silt and that soot till it's all murky. But if you keep pouring in that pure, clean, clear water, it's overflowing and overflowing, it'll eventually clear out all of that muck. And I think that's some of the shaking up that we're seeing.
That's a nice image.
The
yeah.
muck clearing is going on. So.
Totally. And I think that goes back to what you said about how children will learn the most by watching they'll just absorb the way their parents are, the way their parents are in the world. And I think that is also the gift that we can give each other, right? So it's like, it's not just children and their parents. It's really all of us learn through this way of, you know, if we're in a room with 30 people and one person is like acting a certain way, and, you know, that's kind of setting the tone for the way other people are going to respond or look. And so I think we all do have this like real creative potential to just be the person that we want others to be. And quite naturally, they'll just
resonate with it.
Like, resonate towards it. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a new idea for me. Or that's like, I like what that guy's got, or that gal, you know,
right.
It's like, You know, that's a better way than telling people, oh, you're wrong, and this is the right way to think. And, you know, I think just showing people, like, no, here's a person that's modeling vitality, or, right. you know, something else. It's like operating on a deeper and more automatic level. Mm. It's outside the political, outside the, you know.
It's just who that person is.
Or yeah.
Who they choose, like, how they're choosing to create themselves.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
yeah.
And that vibration is powerful because, you know, if we look at this creation, supposedly everything is energy, and energy is vibrating at different rates. And so those in that vibration has a sound, whether we can hear it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And those sounds interact to create the symphony of life and the symphony of life.
I like it.
So, yeah, right.
Go with it.
So, right, exactly. So,
I can hear it.
Right. And it depends. And then we get to choose to play whatever notes we want to play in that.
Yeah.
And do we play harmonically or do we play discordantly is up to us. And people will, I think our general energy is mostly the one to resonate towards the harmonic.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether we have the skill set to do that or not is another question. Whether we have moved through our trauma patterns enough to do that, that's another consideration as well.
Totally.
Yet we can get there. That's the
totally.
To have that commitment to move in those directions, I think, is really vital and important.
That also like reminds me of the idea of being on your own path as opposed to someone else's path.
Yeah.
Because like it's so easy to get caught up in, oh, that guy is better than me in this way, or she's, you know, more talented than I am, and you know, or like you know, really any kind of comparison you might do with others is something that sort of you're looking at someone else's path, and that can be great. You can learn
right.
a lot from it.
Right. But you can be inspired by it.
But it's important to go back to your path and be like, it's not about am I going to be the best XYZ in the world. It's about am I going to be myself most fully, and that's like a different. You know, there's certainly nothing stopping you, anyone from that, you know, because that includes your trauma, that includes your background, that includes your parents, your culture, your history, you know, like all of that then is part of your path. It's not necessarily part of somebody else's path. You
right.
know?
We're unique in those ways.
Yeah. It's like, it's really important to kind of keep coming back to that, I feel. And like, yeah, it just reminded me of that.
I think that what you're speaking about is a type of internal alchemy. When you take your trauma patterns, when you take your background, when you take everything that's happened to you and distill the wisdom from that and then apply that into your life as best you can, that's an alchemical process. You know, and we can be inspired by other people's path.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get information from those pathways. There's something, a distinction I like, call an apersonal experience. We have personal experience and then we have apersonal experience.
Huh.
Apersonal experience is when I witness or observe somebody do something. I was like, oh, either that worked out or that didn't work out. Like, I was like, oh, you know, oh, look, they're doing crack cocaine every day. Like that, okay, that I'm looking at the outcomes. Okay, that's something I don't want to do.
Right.
I don't necessarily
so
need to experience
you don't have
that
to
person.
Go through that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can actually accelerate our learning process
right.
through our observation and evaluation of ourselves and the world around us. And the distinction between observing and evaluating versus judging is really important as well.
That's a really great distinction.
Yeah, because a lot of like discernment is different from judgment. The way I understand judgment is that we have a rigid like thinking around something. We hold it as bad or wrong as a should or an ought. It's rigidized thought forms in our energy pattern.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to observing and evaluating and discerning. And then discerning whether something is effective or not as accurate
right.
as we can.
What results do we get from something? It's like, what results do we
exactly.
get from something?
Exactly. What are the outcomes?
Yeah.
yeah. And then whether that actually would apply to me or not, you know, as opposed to being judging it beforehand or you know, judging ourselves for attempting to engage in something.
Yeah.
Like an example of that is like, oh, God never speaks to earthlings anymore.
Right.
Like that's a judgment pattern, and we're going to limit our experience moving forward because of that judgment pattern.
Totally.
As opposed to holding it open, or another example is water is terrifying. Actually, water is not terrifying. It's like, oh, I might have almost drowned one time, and I haven't moved the terror around that experience yet.
Right.
So, but the water itself is not that. So how many times do we generalize like that in our and hold those rigid thought forms around something as opposed to like releasing that so we can free ourselves up, free our thinking up, free our own selves up, because guess what? If we're judging the world around us, we're definitely judging what's going on inside. So to free ourselves up from that and then let the whatever emotions come up from that and hold the space for that as well, the unconditional acceptance for that. And then we allow ourselves to have more fluidity in the world. And I think what you were talking about our different pathways is important too, because so much of what we have been conditioned is to conform. Mm-hmm. And that's actually limited the amount of evolutionary content on the planet as a collective. Because so many of us are trying to fit into these narrow bandwidths of being, as opposed to, you know, having the acceptance for differences and exploring those things and like seeing what
raising your freak flag.
Freak flag. Yay. Right. And then, and people being cool with that.
Right.
You know, that gets back to the acceptance of, again.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, you know, the whole do you thing. Yeah, do you, but not in a negative way, but in a supportive, right, loving way. Because greatness supports greatness.
Well, look at how many superhero movies there are. There's like hundreds of, right, them now. It's like, okay, are we ready for another story? Like, right, could we have some more creativity? Like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with those movies, but yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like...
the inspiration.
It's like the regurgitation of ideas, yes, is...
Absolutely.
Is really intense. And then it's like, mm-hmm, oh, it's like, you know, it's this real base way of thinking about things. Just, mm-hmm, like... Oh, well, that made money once. We'll just keep doing it until it doesn't make, right, money in the future, right, or whatever. Right. But it's like, that's, you know, that's a really low, like, you know, I don't know. It's a really low goal to set. Mm. I feel like we should all be setting more inspirational goals, even in business, even in the world of, yeah, producing content. Like, you know, it's like, let's do things that are radical, that are like...
and see who responds.
Wildly creative. Right. And see what happens, you know. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Because, exactly, it gets back to that conforming as well. And I agree with you. Like, there are ways that we can expand creatively and on multiple, mm-hmm, levels and multiple arenas that would open up our lives so much, and also help other people be inspired to open up their lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So during this 7-day experience, I think you mentioned at some point to me that you were hoping to kind of trigger some endogenous DMT,
you,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That was some of the original impetus. I read some information or saw some information that said that you can trigger like DMT naturally within the human system,
mm-hmm,
by fasting and being in darkness for 7 days or 8 days or nine, whatever. I don't know with the actual number. I was like, I'll just do 7 and see what happens.
It's a good number.
Yeah, right. I was like, hey, it's a week, 168 hours. So,
counting?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Light, dark. That's it. Right. It's interesting. So in terms of like some of the mechanics of it, I actually set an alarm for the 7-day period. So at the end of the 7 days, an alarm went off to tell,
cool,
me that it was over. So it was, interestingly, I think it was somewhere between the end of the first day, beginning of the 6th day, I did start seeing some like stroboscopic lights behind, mm-hmm, behind my closed eyes. And, that happened probably 15 separate times. And each time it was about 30 to 40 strobes, and they happened, mm-hmm, different colors or whatever. I was like, oh, what's this? And I was just like observing it. Maybe it's my third eye blinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And, so I don't think I experienced any like DMT activations necessarily, yet I did. I got a lot.
A lot
of the stuff that's way, probably, I don't know, is necessarily way more valuable, but it was definitely,
sure,
valuable, because I don't have anything to compare it to. I know that what I got was immensely valuable and transformative.
Yeah, so, I have no doubt. It seems like a really remarkable feat to do. Yeah,
I'll probably do it again. Yeah, I might do shorter. I might try shorter ones. Definitely another 7 day sometime. Yeah.
So I guess just, you know, maybe to kind of wrap up on the subject of fasting and talk about some of these other things that we want to talk about, is there anything that you would say to listeners that want to try, you know, just to start fasting? Would you say intermittent fasting is a good way to go? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of information flowing around about fasting, like intermittent fasting. I wouldn't necessarily call it fasting, because based on my definition earlier,
yeah,
you know, it's just like, oh, you're just not eating for, you know, 18 hours or whatever it is, which is interesting, because years ago I read a book called The Warrior Diet by Ori Hoffmeyer, and it talked about imitating warrior societies that fought and marched during the day and overcompensated around the campfire at night. So the system is you undereat during the day or not at all, and then you have your largest meal at night, which has worked really well for me. And I encourage people to experiment and try. And there's a lot of different types of fasting as well. Some people talk about, you know, the master cleanse of the lemonade diet is also, mm-hmm, called water fast. The less nutrients you take in, the more intense the cleansing is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So a water fast is really going to be more hardcore than a juice fast.
And have you done just a pure water fast?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I've done. I haven't done. I think I've done maybe a day and a half, 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
maybe 3 days. I don't remember, but yeah, I've done that before. But that's, like I said, that's hardcore. Mm-hmm. Like for each individual, it's like I really had to talk to a person to see what their dietary history was.
Absolutely.
What I would generally recommend for people, there is a protocol called the 9-day blood wash, which is 3 days of salads, like meal salads, like all day, as much as you want. Then 3 days of juices, vegetable juices all one day, fruit juices the next day, vegetable juices again, and then back to 3 days of salads. Hmm. So it's almost like a sine wave, you know, of
yeah.
intensity. And that I think that's a great protocol for people, because the salads will help cleanse the intestines and get rid of certain toxins to help you get ready for the juice days. The fruit is extremely detoxifying.
Hmm.
So mm-hmm. the human system is really vastly intelligent. Mm-hmm. So when we consume things that aren't good for us or are toxic for us, our body will store them in certain places, in the joints, in the tissues, in the places in the liver. Our liver is actually huge. Mm-hmm. And so when we start detoxifying, sometimes those things will dump into the bloodstream at an accelerated rate, which could not necessarily be harmonic for us or feel good. So,
sure.
So, you know, part of, you know, if people have a temperament, like some of the Aries in me is like, yeah, go for it, just do it, you know. And then another part of me is like, hey, you know, just be mindful of yourself. And because I think there is a tendency for us to be, especially in this culture, to be like, yeah.
Just all or nothing.
All
yeah.
in.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Go hard or go home, you know. It's yeah. just like, and then you end up with long-term problems and like
totally.
Or brokenness or injuries. And injuries just get in the way of like your conditioning and your training mm-hmm. and stuff. And,
absolutely.
You know, there are times to push. And I think that the idea of pushing consistently every time is fallacious, because the human body is a complex system, and all complex systems work in cycles. Mm-hmm. So you have to cycle on and cycle off, cycle on and cycle off. If you overtrain, you gotta let yourself recover and undertrain. So, mm-hmm. and I think about like if I could go back in time to a younger version of me back when I was like working out hard and mm-hmm. I still work out hard, but I'd be like rest. And eat,
yeah.
like in that order, pretty much,
Right.
Or just like I would do, go to African dance class, go to African dance rehearsal for a performance, then go teach my capoeira class, then kick everybody out and train myself, and not eat that whole time.
Right.
And then at 3 a.m, I'm like eating a burrito or something.
Right.
You know, it's like snack in between, like so you get the gains, because a lot of the people think, our gains happen in the gym or in the training facility. It's actually, in the 95, 96, 97% of the time, we're not training.
Right.
It's in the rest of nutrition.
It's when the body's rebuilding.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
All the stuff that when we train, it just sets into motion the impulse and the impetus for adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when that happens, think about the 168 hours in a week.
Yeah.
You know, if you train an hour every day, which is can be a lot, that's 7 hours in the week. That's still less than 5% of the whole week. Is the other 95% of the time when the gains actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
Rest and nutrition.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah. It's definitely an underappreciated component of, the athletic
yeah.
performance cycle.
Absolutely.
I think, for sure.
Absolutely.
Especially for people who are just starting out. Because I remember when I was, first starting with something like trail running,
mm.
I wanted to push myself way harder than, my brain wanted to push myself
exactly.
way harder than my body was ready for,
right.
and that results in injury. And, I think I had to just learn those lessons by actually injuring myself
right,
a bit
exactly.
and being like, okay, don't want to do that again because
right.
it's so disruptive. And
exactly.
You
just get off the cycle.
And then you start to, start to learn that, oh, yeah, I have to build a deeper kind of kinesthetic awareness.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what all of, it's a lot of this kind of... even a lot of healing work is about increasing awareness. It's like
mm-hmm.
how much are we sensing and feeling, and how much can we be aware of, what's causing us to feel a certain way, or,
absolutely.
And then what things can we manipulate in that system? What are the variables that we can control?
Uh-huh.
Whether that's even just like how I react to my mom or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
It can be a lot of different things.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's cool.
I think awareness is one of the most powerful aspects of our being and our powerful tools we have or ways of engaging. I do my best to try to notice as much as I can about as much as I can,
mm-hmm.
which increases my capacity to notice. And it starts internally. Because like I mentioned earlier, we had a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week laboratory called Self. So having... train myself to go through a process of like, why did I think that? Why did I say that? Why did I do that? And to actually be ruthlessly honest.
Mm-hmm.
And by ruthless, I don't mean mean or cruel. I mean vigilant. Yeah. Like tenacious. It's
totally.
Like, I'm going to be honest with myself about, oh, I was looking for attention there. Or, oh, I was jealous of that person, so I was trying to,
right.
you know, take over the listening space and dominate so, you know, people could pay attention to me instead. Or mm-hmm. whatever it is, like, noticing those patterns.
Totally.
And then being able to be in choice around them
mm-hmm.
first. And then moving to a place where we can dismantle or dissolve them.
And that's huge. So that points me to a question for you, which
yeah.
is like, it's something I've thought about a couple of times, but I'm curious to hear what you think about it.
Yeah.
Is why don't schools teach this, what we're talking about right now? Like, this
yes.
seems like what we should be
yes.
teaching children, right?
Yes.
It's like how, like, basically giving them this sense of like exposing the underlying hardware and implicit bias structures that
mm-hmm.
they have, and like what you're describing about, we have this really intense will towards self-deception, right? Where we like,
absolutely.
You know, if we're trying to achieve a goal, like I find myself doing this where if I'm like trying to, you know, practice something every day,
mm-hmm.
I'm tempted to just like do the smallest, most half-assed practice just so I can like cross off that thing
right.
on my list and feel good about it. Like, you know, it's like, that's a weird thing. I'm like, that's not why I created the system of keeping track of this.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be data. I don't want it to be this like aspirational, like someday I'll be this guy. I want it to be like, no, who am I actually today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's like
mm-hmm.
a weird, I don't know. So that's a sidetrack maybe, but the question is basically like, yeah, why aren't we taught these things in school?
Mm.
I don't remember anyone speaking about anything even remotely like how to manage my attention.
Yes.
How to, you know, handle my sexuality. How to, like, all these
Absolutely.
Deep core things that
Absolutely.
Are like just actually what it's about to be a human.
Right.
It's like, we're not talking about it at all in
right.
school. It's like, where is that?
Right.
What do you think about that?
It's absent. It's interesting. I helped start one of the first two charter schools in Durham, North Carolina. When I lived there, I was one of six founding board members. Four of us were trained in diversity awareness, diversity inclusion methodology from the National Coalition Building Institute. So we decided to build a school around community and leadership. And it's interesting, in the process of deciding how we were going to design the school, I saw this quote. I forget who the person was who said it, and I'm probably paraphrasing it. It was, to create a school is to decide what it is to be human.
Mm.
And that's exactly what's going
Brilliant.
On. Our idea of what's human hasn't expanded to the fullness of what actually being human is.
Right.
So we had this stuck, left-brained, limited idea of what we're supposed to learn
mm-hmm.
and how we're supposed to learn it.
And why.
Yeah. Those three things, like what we're supposed to learn. So it's English, writing, reading, arithmetic. How we're supposed to learn is sit down in your ass in a desk for 6 hours. I wouldn't want to sit for 6 hours a day and just have a talking head talk at you generally.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking this information and be able to regurgitate it. And why we're learning it. Like, what's the point? Some of it has to actually do with conditioning of the mental space, the
mm-hmm.
the thought forms. You know, government governs your mental.
Mm-hmm.
Governmental is like, that's the design for
yeah.
it, you know? And then, so there isn't the quest for freedom. There isn't the quest for self-awareness. There isn't the quest for learning about oneself and the universe and one's relationship between the two. Because, you know, we aren't taught meditation. We aren't taught self-awareness. We aren't taught social interactions, sexual interactions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff's suppressed. But those are the things, like you mentioned, that actually govern how we go in the world
right.
once schooling is done, or once we're outside the classroom, or even when we're in the classroom. Like, those are the core level things of us as human beings relating. And we don't learn anything about that.
Right.
We don't learn how to get in relationships. We don't learn how to be in relationships. We don't learn how to get out of relationships.
No, we just see our parents model, maybe a couple other people around
right.
us. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And either we do what our parents did, or we do the opposite.
Mm.
Like, my mother had the experience, and we've talked about this quite a number of times, where her mother was not exactly mothering energy.
Mm-hmm.
And she remembers distinctly, around the age 14, I think she said she was, distinctly deciding that when she has a family, she was going to do the opposite. She was going to make sure it was loving and nurturing and warm and caring. And I thanked her for that. I was like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think you and my father have done a pretty good job of that.
Yeah.
Created a nice foundational energy from from which I can evolve and grow. I'm not saying there wasn't any trauma, there wasn't any dysfunction. I think from what I've seen and experienced, there was less of it than some other places, which has been beneficial to myself and my sister. Back to the school part. Yeah, there may be some actual intentional diabolical design to not to have human beings like expand in those ways, to keep people limited, to keep people controlled, pretty much enslaved energetically and mentally and emotionally. And I think we're moving out of that into a space of that expansion. I actually wrote some notes in a book of mine about what I call Aquarian Age education.
Cool.
Like how would you educate young ones in the age of Aquarius, in an Aquarian age, if we feel like we're moving into that space, into a new earth, into, you know, a higher dimensional aspect, like how would true education take place? And I distinguish true education from schooling. Mm-hmm. Schooling is a conditioning pattern. It's like an inculcation process. Whereas education, if you look at the Latin root, is a or ex, the prefix meaning from or away from, and ducare, the verb to lead or to draw out of. So it's to lead someone away from something or to draw something out of someone. So it's like to draw out your own divinity, to draw out your own knowing, or to lead you away from ignorance, or to lead you towards yourself. So true education has a very different energy than schooling does. And I think that's where we need to go as a collective or I think it would be beneficial for us to go
as a collective
for us to move into those higher levels of engagement with one another.
That's something. Did I get that right? That you've published some books?
Yeah. I have one of the three very kind of eclectic books too. My first book was a self-defense manual.
Cool.
So I from my martial arts training, I've been training since I was very young. I started teaching self-defense workshops and wrote that. Finished it right at my graduation in college, and then I wrote a book based on the diversity awareness training I do. It's called One Heart at a Time. And it has to do with like some insights and reminders about diversity, inclusion, and leadership and motivation. And I use that as either an intro to organizations for the diversity training I do, or as something that goes along with it that people can, after they go through the training, they can have that as a reminder. And then I wrote a book called Womb Words, Gentle Loving Communications for Developing Humans in Utero.
Oh, nice.
Which speaks to some of the developmental stuff we're talking about.
Yeah.
Supposedly the in utero time is some of the most powerful emotionally and psychologically for a human being. And to take advantage of that time. So the book actually is a protocol of 10 lunar months to match the 10 lunar months of the gestation cycle. And each one has a different energy, love, abundance and prosperity, wholeness, acceptance, things like that. And it is phrases or words that people can say, sing, tone, chant, dance to the developing human in utero.
Wow.
It's interesting. That's the subtitle and that's the original intent for it. It's actually a beautiful engagement for anybody who's out of utero too.
Yeah,
like
right.
We can go through the process ourselves as we desire. You know, it's designed for a one energy every month, but we could do one a day or one a week. And like take ourselves through that process and give ourselves our own rebirthing in some ways to give ourselves those energies that we may not have gotten while we were in the womb.
That's cool. Are you a parent?
I'm not.
No.
Energetically, I think I have a lot of kids. I have three nephews and I've worked, like I said, I've done a lot of early intervention work where I felt parental to young ones.
Yeah.
And
I was just wondering if that was what kind of inspired that book.
Oh, interesting.
Or like,
Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
That's a great question. What inspired it was actually my work doing early intervention stuff.
Okay.
Because I was working, like I said, kindergarten to fifth grade. And I remember seeing 1 5-year-old. I was working in another separate program in North Carolina at the time. And we were doing a summer program. And this 5-year-old was running around in circles and screaming. And I was watching him. And intuitively, I knew what he was doing. Like he was clearing trauma. And then it got me and we were getting ready to go on a field trip. And so we were trying to load up this van and he's just sitting there like screaming and running in circles. And part of me thought about that. It's like, here's a human being who's been on the earth for 5 years and already has a deep level of trauma. And I found out later he'd been sexually abused.
Oh, wow.
So part of me is like, okay, I'm working with an early intervention program. So we're intervening in something. As comprehensive as it was, as much as I loved working with the young ones, it was still a band-aid or a patch on something that things that weren't working,
right.
A system that wasn't working, parental units, like parenting, may be the trickiest and toughest occupation on the planet, and there's no training for it.
Right.
There's no training for it. It's like you said earlier, you either do what your parents did, or like I said, you try to not do what your parents did, but there's no training for it at all.
And most parents are just like struggling to make ends meet and work their jobs. And like, then it's like the kids are the last thing that they get to really attend to.
Exactly. You know? And that gets to like the deeper issues of how our society is designed, which was, could be a whole nother conversation, you know? So seeing this 5-year-old and asking the question of like, what would be the early stage to, you know, in, quote unquote, intervene, you know, or to begin that process. I was like, well, 4, 5, 3, 2, 1.
The womb.
The womb.
Okay.
And actually, you know, some metaphysical systems talk about conception. At conception, like, ideally, that's, I think, the design, the direction I want to go in is coaching people at, or either preconception as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like
a very, like, a deeper kind of continuity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of, like, intent and...
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Because sex and sexuality and sexual energy... It's probably one of our most powerful gifts.
Totally.
Yet, I think it's probably the least understood and maybe one of the most abused.
Absolutely.
In terms of like how it goes in the world. But use of sexual energy can help us transform and transmute ourselves.
Absolutely.
In ways that are profound.
No, it seems like an area that is like, again, it's like really oddly ignored and sort of put into this gutter and made into this thing that's like not... Like, oh, don't look at that. Even though it's like constantly so core, you know, a core part of what it means to be a human being.
Absolutely.
For all of us. And it's...
We came from vagina.
Yeah. And like, a huge motivating force. And also just like you say, it is like a tapping into the creative potential energy of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that can be easily put into a gutter, actually.
No, not at all.
It's like, it's way more central and it's weird that we have a kind of a bit of a schizophrenic relationship to it where we haven't put those pieces together to
mm-hmm.
make a coherent whole,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think until we start to do that as a culture, we're just going to continue to have, you know, these sort of suboptimal outcomes.
Hey, that's,
you know?
That's generous. So it's interesting. You know, I think of creative energy and sexual energy. Some people, you know, I'm holding up two fingers and pushing them together so they're parallel to each
right.
other. It's like they're not actually like this. They're like this. It's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we, to ignore that is to ignore essential aspects of our own being. Like I mentioned, we all came from a vagina. You know, we were products of the sexual union. You know, scientists think the universe was created by what? The Big Bang. It's
right.
like, you know, the mother,
yeah.
father, creator, God is like still sexualizing. They're still creating creation. They're still
right.
engaging.
And what is life itself if not the creative impulse? You
exactly.
know, it's like, it's that's what it is.
Exactly.
In my view, I think
yeah.
it's like an easy way to see it. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the creative will is actually... You know, it could be another word for imagination, but I think that we're all like, well, part of this unfolding process, you know, and then it
reminds me or brings to mind the word desire, which some systems on the planet actually decry or dismiss or degrade, whereas actually desire is the impulse of creation as well, is the energy that had creation be created, is desire, capital D, that
totally.
Flows through us all and has us move and be and grow in the world and the universe.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, desire is an incredible thing. I was actually trying to write a poem the other day of just the idea of it was just like, I want to just write a poem that's just descriptions of desire. Like, how can I describe desire in interesting ways? It's not done. It's not,
yeah,
and it's not good right now. But it's such a crazy and interesting concept to like explore, you know?
Absolutely. Now I'm going to go look at the etymology of the word. I like looking at the etymology of source energies behind language.
Totally.
Because language is so powerful in terms of how we describe ourselves in the world. Like some people will say that all of this is a conversation that we've agreed upon.
Mm-hmm.
So as to have an understanding of the energies that are behind that or impulsing that or the origin points or core.
Totally.
Is vital. Yeah.
Etymology is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Always is revealing. It always shows you, it teaches you something that you didn't.
Yeah.
It
absolutely.
Like illuminates a new perspective
mm-hmm.
on the thing that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
So So you're a martial artist, you're a dancer, you're an educator.
Yes.
What else do you want to tell me about that? Like, that's a lot. We haven't really talked about dancing very much.
Yeah, I've danced with a contemporary indigenous dance company for the past 12 years. Dancing Earth is the only contemporary indigenous dance company in the United States.
Cool.
So yeah, that's been great. We do a lot of outreach work when we tour, workshops for the community. We definitely connect into indigenous communities wherever we are. We've done international work, been to a number of different states and probably exposed to thousands of young ones. And I teach down in Cochiti Pueblo.
Cool.
Which is south of here, about 40 minutes. And I've been teaching movement there for 6 years, doing acrobatics and capoeira. And awesome. I love the movement arts. You know, I did West African dance professionally back in North Carolina. Capoeira, I've done numerous workshops and performances, some modern, some jazz, hip-hop, house styles, you know, urban contemporary dance styles, and, you know, even, like, really eclectic things like Thai classical dance and Chinese folk dance, and, definitely some Latin style, salsa, merengue, bachata, so, yeah, I love movement arts.
So with these kids and these populations that you're working with, in this dance capacity, what do you see? Like, what does that look like for you? Are you seeing kids that have some connection to dance already that want to be learning dance, or are you just like getting a general population of kids that haven't had any exposure to dance, or what is that like?
It's interesting. The school I'm at is a Montessori language immersion school. So they're revitalizing the Karis language, which is the language of the Cochiti people. And this is really small. There's about 13 students there, 12 to 13. Mm. And I've been there 6 years, so you can imagine, like, I've seen some of them from a very young age to where they are now, 10, 11, 12. And we had the range from 2.5, 3-year-olds to 10, 11-year-olds. So I think for some of the older ones, I may have been their first exposure, besides any traditional dance they saw in the Pueblo.
Sure.
I may have been their first exposure to other types of movement, movement base. And so it's pretty fascinating and great to be that conduit for that expanded learning for them. So, and some of them, and it's interesting to see the different body types and how insert and also the preconceptions they have about what they can and can't do.
Right.
As interesting as having instructed for so long, like, I can see generally the capacities of human bodies when, especially in capoeira, when people start going upside down doing cartwheels like that, and they haven't spent that much time on their hands since when they were crawling as a baby. It's like, I can see that they have the ability to do it physically. Yet their own conceptions or their fears, mental blockages, their fears, what they have moved through, you know, limits their conceptions of themselves. So to be able to hold the space to move people in those directions. You know, and people have different temperaments as well in terms of learning. I had some students, I could yell at them across the room, hey, keep your legs straight. And others, I would go whisper to them, you know, just to, because they had, like, different ways of receiving things.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what would you say, what is the power of dance as a movement modality?
That's interesting, because I think there are certain movement practices that by their nature draw in more of who we are in terms of, from other levels, or being our emotional, our mental, our spiritual, our energetic. I think dance is one of those. Gymnastics might be another. Yoga could be considered another. They require our participation on multiple levels. And I think that's the beautiful thing about dance, because, and especially specifically Dancing Earth, we have an emotional intention behind everything we do, all the movements. There's a story arc or an energetic arc of healing that goes on. It's been described as functional ritual. Like, if when we're on stage, we're going through a movement ritual that people will call a performance, yet people who are audience members are also participating. In that ritual, in that healing, in the clearing that's going on. And this is from not only my observation, but also the feedback we've gotten from audience members when, you know, they tell us they cried and they didn't know why they were crying, or, you know, they felt really deeply moved by some of the things they saw in the imagery. So, yeah, it's really powerful work, and I appreciate it. And I think dance has that capacity for healing, for deep healing, for transformation, for communication. And a lot of people think that they can't dance or they can't sing, but you know.
That's what I was gonna say. What do you say to the listener who's out there who's thinking like, well, that's fine, but I don't dance.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fine for them, but I can't dance, or like, I've got no rhythm.
I think there's an African proverb that, or is attributed being an African proverb, that if you could talk, you could sing, and if you can walk, you can dance.
Okay.
So it's like, those are conceptions as well. Of course, there's going to be different levels because of like the training we went through or what have you. Yet, to just turn on some music by yourself at home and just move how you feel, it could be extremely healing and liberating.
And
joy-inducing. You know, same thing with singing is like, you know, just belt out something, like just try.
Totally.
Experiment and explore. We have this amazing sound generator called our voice,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, like I mentioned, I think a couple times before, like everything is, we assume or understand this universe is all energy vibrating at different rates, and vibrations make a sound, whether we can hear it or not. It's like we're creating that sound. You know, certain systems talk about, first there was the word,
mm-hmm.
which is sound. And the word was with God. It's like that's our creative aspect and
that's beautiful.
Functionality. Yeah.
So what do you say to someone who's saying, you know, who's thinking to themselves, well, I can't sing. I'm a person who can't sing.
Right.
I'm a person who can't dance. Like,
right.
Can we unpack that
a little
bit? Like how, like what is that thought process for someone who, you know, if you think about somebody who's telling themselves that.
Right.
What is that actually, what's actually happening there?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that gets back to what I was talking about, judgment patterns earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have a judgment around ourselves. We have a limiting thought form around ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and we live into that thought form.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually create it, and we actually help sustain it and create it. And the more times we repeat something, the stronger the thought form gets.
I'm afraid of heights.
Exactly. You know, and it's almost like a mantra mm-hmm. that we hypnotize ourselves with. And to make that reality even stronger, or to create that as a reality for ourselves, that's probably more accurate. Because the true reality is that we can do those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about applying ourselves.
Totally.
And desiring it. And, you know, with all the resources we have available to us now with the internet, it's like you could create a program for yourself to learn how to dance, or a program for yourself to learn how to sing. Like, there's resources out
right.
there.
Right.
Which
kind of points to this idea that like we ourselves tend to be our own worst enemies a lot of the time. Like our biggest limiting factor is often ourselves.
Yeah, how we think about ourselves.
Yeah.
The cobbled together self-image from the scraps of our experience of misinformation or trauma or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then we create this presentation that we go into the world with,
mm-hmm.
which actually is a mask and is not anywhere near the fullness of our potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what would happen if we strip those things away, if we dismantle that, if we disappear those things and allow ourselves to just explore and play like a child. Like we didn't have that stuff when we were young, like pre-trauma. It's like, who's going to be, you know, the president of the United States? Oh, that's me. Who's going to be an astronaut? That's me too. Who's going to be a superstar basketball player? Oh, that's me. I'm going to do that. Who's going to invent the best thing in the world? Oh, I'm going to do it. Like, it's just to everything.
Yeah.
You know, and somewhere along the line, somebody says,
you can't do that. Exactly. Or you failed. Or
exactly.
Look at you.
Right.
You know, like made fun of you, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. We experience the trauma in some ways, and then we start to shut ourselves down.
And so when we talk about this, you know, there's a lot of people I think out there who are talking about healing
mm-hmm.
in general, just like that term is thrown around a lot. And I think there's also a lot of talk about trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that like, this is not a condition that some people have. It's a condition that all of us have. Is that mm-hmm. kind of
in terms of trauma? Yeah.
Yeah, trauma and healing and like having to go through that.
I think if you're listening to this, if you're walking on planet Earth right now, you have trauma.
Right, exactly. Right? Yeah.
And even off planetary, some of the stuff I understand about like the origins of creation is like there was trauma from the beginning
mm-hmm.
and we got imprinted with that trauma. And now we can choose to heal those things or not, you know, and the furthest edge of that are the, you know, the divine parents, the creator energy who are healing themselves and evolving.
Mm-hmm.
That's another limiting thing. We think that the creator God doesn't evolve or heal.
Mm-hmm.
The mother, father, creator God, goddess is constantly evolving. It's like, why, as above, so below, as below, so above. We're
mm-hmm.
evolving, so wouldn't that make sense that they're evolving too?
Nothing is fixed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why would it be, unless it is, but,
yeah.
right? But why would we staticize, like make static
right.
the creator energy when, you know, there's such a vastness of universes upon universes
right.
of, you know, things to explore and engage in. I've heard that there are as many universes in creation as there are grains of sand on every beach in this planet. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, if we started expanding to that vastness, it's like, okay, then how can we participate in that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can we engage in that? How can we explore that and have joy in that and experience joy in that?
Totally.
Expansions.
And find strength in that, too.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, find a place, you know, some relevance, because it can feel overwhelming, kind of.
Absolutely.
You're like, what is all this? I'm insignificant.
Right.
But I think it comes back to, I think, like, for me, I take this sort of profound comfort in the sense that we exist in the same way that the sun and stars exist.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
mm-hmm.
there's something really fundamental about the things that actually exist. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, they're,
mm-hmm.
you know, we are like of the same stuff as gravity itself, you
yes.
know? And it's like, so, you know, do you need to assert your relevance even? Like, is that even
exactly,
like a
right.
thing that needs
right.
to happen? Like, is
right.
it already just intrinsic, you know?
You're worthy because
yeah.
you exist.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, going back to earlier, human being versus human doing, that's something we miss or we get
mm-hmm.
conditioned out of, to look at external accolades or accomplishments or achievements as a determiner of how valuable we are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
cool.
And to get back to your earlier comment of like, yeah, I think we're all traumatized to various degrees and various levels, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, sexually, energetically,
mm-hmm.
and for us to work through those trauma patterns to true healing and to become, so we can actually express ourselves in that fullness as, you know, suns and galaxies within physical form, within two-legged physical form
mm-hmm.
here now is excellent adventure.
Totally. So we've kind of gone on for a bit of a long time. So I want to like ask a few questions
yeah,
to kind of tie things up.
Cool.
I think, so what are you excited about currently, and where can listeners either like engage more with you or find out more about what you're doing?
Cool.
And, you know, just kind of what's going on for you right now?
Excellent. Great question. I think it is connected to what I mentioned earlier about the shakeup that's going on. I'm excited about the changes that we're experiencing as a collective, and I'm feeling intensely individually. I think a lot of people, they may not know what's going on, but they feel there's this buildup of intensity of shift and change and transformation. And that could be terrifying for some people
mm-hmm.
because it's the unknown in some ways. And sometimes the unknown can trigger our terror and our fear of the unknown. So I'm excited about the changes that are happening. I'm excited about, you know, my own evolutionary growth and my own evolutionary pathway, because I've committed to that accelerated evolutionary growth, and it feels like acceleration is accelerating. And because as we all individually evolve and grow, we help the collective evolve and grow, because we're all connected
mm-hmm.
to this human holographic. And so if any one person heals, that helps everyone heal.
Absolutely.
So for that, I'm grateful for and excited about.
That's cool.
And for people to connect with me, they can go to upliftyourbeing.com.
Beautiful.
/the created life.
Awesome.
And then also email address is djoate@hotmail.com. Got an old school Hotmail.
Hotmail. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
djoate@hotmail. So yeah.
It's not AOL, but
yeah, right.
It's still got some old school
yeah,
cred.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
That's cool. And then so one final question that I've been
yeah.
kind of asking all of my guests is, if you could sort of, you know, wave your magic wand and essentially give the whole world either one idea or one practice and just sort of like virally spread this thing to all people, what would you choose and why?
That's a great question. And now this, it would be an idea that they would...
Could either be like an idea or a concept, or it could
mm-hmm.
be, you know, a practice. Like, maybe you would say, I want people to meditate, or, you know...
Gotcha.
You know, who knows? Like,
okay.
whatever it is, like, if you could just make one change and this was the thing,
yeah.
you could just like, I'm gonna, you know...
Yeah, bling. Right.
Yeah.
There's actually two things that come up, and they're related. They're kind of,
okay.
I think, opposite ends of the spectrum.
We'll give you two, then.
And
then,
right, there's like two sides of a coin.
Okay.
So it's one coin.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
okay.
There we go. Phew, got away with that. Right. So, and it's related to some of the stuff we've been talking about earlier. I would say self-acceptance.
Hmm.
Like unconditional acceptance. I think that's foundational to a lot of healing, transformational work. So whatever comes up, however it looks, all the you know, the things we judge as unpleasant, the rage, the terror, the heartache, the grief, all of that, like the I call him my man DT, the DT in me, like the tyrant and oppressor in me, like claim all of that,
right?
Because the only place it can be healed is on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we've cut it away from ourselves in the first place is because we didn't have acceptance for it. We judged mm-hmm. it. So that's the flip side of the coin. It's like to end that denial, end that judgment that we have around different aspects of ourselves. Because what we've done is, if we cut it away from ourselves, it can actually manifest physically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's running amok on the planet when actually some of that stuff belongs to us as individuals.
Right.
So those of us who are of that healing desire and mentality could be quote unquote parental to those pieces. We need to claim that stuff back, accept it for what it is, heal it on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I would say self-acceptance, that ends the denial and the judgment patterns.
Wow, that's really great.
Excellent.
I really like that answer.
Great yeah. ending, huh?
Totally. Thank cool. you so much for your time
yeah,
today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Damien.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of The Created Life. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends about it or support us with a donation. Also, please let me know what you liked or didn't like about the show, and if you've got a suggestion for an interview or topic you would like TCL to cover, you can send a message to Damien@Wildest. That's Damien@WILD.IST. See you next time.